Hi, everyone, and welcome to One Question with Pastor Adam. And I'm Adam, and I am pastor to believers and doubters, to unfaithful Christians and faithful atheists. And friends, Jesus was not afraid of questions, and neither are we. Well, maybe we're a little afraid today. Can we laugh? Can we laugh at the beginning? Maybe we're a little afraid today about this question, but Jesus wasn't afraid of questions, and neither are we. So we're going to go over some questions. Some of them are easier, and some of them are more difficult. And we're just going to do it. And I got this question on my Instagram account from Healing Path Mama. Oh, I wish I knew this person in real life. Healing Path Mama, that's awesome, asks this question. Can you speak out on the Palestine-Israel conflict? And yes, I can. I'll try to do so in a way that's kind of smart. Hi, April, Melanie, and Amber. This conflict feels overwhelming to all of us. And it is overwhelming. And in order to know all of the history of it, it's as if you have to have a PhD in order to in Israel-Palestine conflict, in the history of all of this. And it's just super complicated. But I'm gonna make a stand on this. But before I do, I want to be clear about one thing, especially in my location here in the United States. And this is, I think, helpful for us to understand, is that here in the United States, there is growing anti-Semitism happening here. During the last 4 years or so, we had people in the streets chanting, "The Jews will not replace us." That kind of anti-Semitism is demonic, and it needs to be called out for the racism that it is. Our Jewish siblings are created in the image of God just as much as anyone else is. They have the sacred image of God in them. So for people in the United States to talk about Jewish space lasers, to have all kinds of conspiracies that Jewish people own the banks or own all kinds of political power, and so we need to be afraid of the Jews who are going to replace us. Stop. That's racist, anti-Semitic garbage here in the United States, and it needs to stop, right? So we also have a growing anti-Muslim, anti-Islamic sentiment happening in the United States. We had an attempted Muslim ban during the last 4 years, and that's garbage too. We've got this sentiment that some of our political leaders here in the United States, Rashida Tlaib and others, Ilhan Omar, need to go back to their countries, back to where they came from. They're from here. They're from the United States. The problem that we have is a strand that typically comes from the far right that says you have to get rid of the other. You have to cleanse your nation, your community from the evil other. That is a problem here in the United States. We have had politicians who try to gain that kind of power by labeling an evil other that we can all unite against. Don't fall for that game. Don't fall for it. It happens in the United States, and it happens in other countries too, and it happens in Israel. We need to be very clear that criticizing the nation of Israel is not to criticize Judaism. I have many Jewish friends who criticize the nation of Israel for oppressive practices. In fact, that internal critique is inherent to Judaism. Judaism, which has beautiful passages in its sacred scripture, including Leviticus chapter 19, which Jesus quoted, the Jewish Jesus quoted, love your neighbor as you love yourself. That's Leviticus 19, 18. Leviticus 19, 34 to 35 says, love the foreigner in your midst. What does that mean? Don't treat the foreigner as if they are some kind of evil other. Love the foreigner. That's it. That's according to the Jewish Jesus, according to many of my Jewish friends, that's the point. That is the point. And so whenever we in the United States or any other country, including Israel, the nation of Israel, fails to live into that ideal, it should be criticized from within the Jewish context, from within the Christian context, and from within the Islamic context as well. How did this all start? The events of this week. I was driving with my son, taking him to soccer practice yesterday, and he was talking with me about this, and he had watched a TikTok video of somebody who was trying to explain the conflict. And he said, well, this guy said it goes back to 1948, the nation of Israel, when there was the war of 1948. And so this group hurt this group. And so and I was like, dude, this goes back. You could go, there are some people who say, no, this goes back to 1870 when this group took the land from this group. Why do you stop at 1870? Why don't you go back to 1760 where the group took land from the other group? And you can go all the way. This is what we do. This is not just a pattern that we have in the Middle East. It's also a pattern that's very human. He hit me first. When I was explaining this to my son, I was like, you know how you say your brother hit you first, and so you hit him back, and your brother says, no, but he hit me first yesterday. And then, oh no, he hit me. Who hit who first? It doesn't matter. Just drop your weapons. Just stop. And if you have the power in the situation, that's even more responsibility on you to drop your weapons. And that's where we're at. And so just the events of this week, started off, I think it was on Monday, and you go back like a month ago and the Israeli government was trying to stop Muslims from congregating for Ramadan. It was this power play, and Muslims didn't like it. I wouldn't like it either if somebody was trying to tell me how many people could congregate and things like that, right? For no good reason. So don't get me wrong here. Like the last year, we haven't been meeting at my church because a very good reason, the coronavirus, right? So there are some Christians who are like trying to make themselves out to be the victims. Oh, we can't worship God together because you're going to kill each other if you'd had because of this coronavirus. So here, Muslims were congregating for the holy month of Ramadan, and they were trying to limit how many people could do that. Well, that makes people upset. And they'd also, I think the Israeli government was this week, part of what they did was attack the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the holiest mosque in this area for Muslims. I've seen footage of Israeli troops going in there and doing flashbangs while Muslims are, it's just this power play. They put the mosque on fire. The mosque is still there. The fire went out, apparently, but it's all intimidation. And what does that do? It escalates. That's what we're seeing. On Monday in East Village of Jerusalem, where Palestinians live and have lived, they have every right to live there. They have every legal right to be there. They've got their paperwork and everything. The Israeli government decided to take their homes away from them, to make it so they couldn't live in their homes anymore. And why? So that Israelis could live there. They're trying to take over the land from Palestinians. And we're seeing the conflict escalate over and over again. Why are they doing this? There are all kinds of theories. One is that Benjamin Netanyahu is trying to do exactly what Trump did the last 4 years, create an enemy that that his base can unite behind so that he can keep his political power. It's often what it boils down to. There was relative peace leading up to this. And so what do you do in order to keep your power? You create an enemy. And that's the human condition. That's what, I shouldn't say that's the human condition. That's what Benjamin Netanyahu did. It looks like, so that he can keep his power. So the politics involved in here are ugly. And you know, there are folks who are trying to both sides this thing, as if Hamas has the same kind of military power that Israel has. They don't. Let's not both sides this thing. Is there violence? Of course. Of course there's violence on both sides. But one side has dominating violence and the other doesn't. One side has the power to evict people from their homes. The other side doesn't. So this is obviously, as I started off saying, super complicated issue. And you almost have to have a PhD in order to talk about it. But you know, from my perspective as a Christian pastor, there are Palestinians who are Christians. It doesn't matter if you're Jewish, Christian, Muslim, atheist, and you're living in this area, you're under threat of this violence, that you're under threat of being evicted from your house. It's the human aspect of this that is tragic, and the way that we treat one another. So those are kind of my quick thoughts on this issue, and I'll go to some comments here. Anna says, this country is supposed to be a melting pot. Racism and xenophobia has turned it into a garbage bag. Well, the garbage bag metaphor, I've heard melting pot, salad. Now Anna has introduced me to the garbage bag. Yeah. Maybe we can take out the garbage. That sounded really weird when I said it. Take out the garbage within ourselves and within our nation. And, you know, I mean, I know that Israel is a supposedly secular government, but you can't deny the religious aspect within all of this. You know, the way that I interpret our scriptures, what Christians call the Old Testament, is really the beginning of Genesis chapter 12, where Abraham and Sarah and a little later on Hagar, Abraham's concubine, who ends up being the mother of our Palestinian and Arab siblings, our Muslim siblings. At the beginning of this whole story, where we all trace our roots back to Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar, Abraham, they get this message that God will make you and your descendants as numerous as the stars, as the sand in the sea, countless. And what are you to do? What are you and your descendants to do? To be a blessing to one another, to be a blessing to all the families of the earth. It is through this lineage that we all share that we are called to be a blessing to one another. The story says that if there is any cursing that is to be done, that's to be done by God, not by us. That is the foundational story for Jews, Christians, and Muslims. The whole rest of the Bible is how we either live into that story or how we fail to live into that story. And the Bible is very honest about how we frequently fail to live into that story, but everything begins with that message, to be a blessing, not just to your family. That's hard enough, right? To be a blessing to your family and all the families of the earth. That includes Palestinian families, includes Jewish families and Christian families and atheist families and Buddhist families, all the families of the earth. That's our job with one another. And so when Leviticus says, love the foreigner in your midst, that's what it's living out. It's living out that tendency. Now, there's another strand within scriptures as well, which doesn't live into this passage, right? That's where I say the Bible is very honest, often tragically honest about its history. You know, there's one strand that says they moved into the Holy Land and God called them to kill off everybody living there. You all heard that story. It's a tragic story. One of the interesting things about that story, and you can read James Allison for this interpretation and many others as well, there is no archaeological evidence that a group of Hebrews entered into the land, the promised land, 4,000 years ago. There's no we have got archaeological evidence for other things. You would think of how the Old Testament tells this story, there would be plenty of archaeological evidence during that time of this massive conquest that happened. But there's no archaeological evidence for it. Why? Because it didn't happen. Many scholars today say that what ended up happening was that there were different groups already living in the land, and one group ended up having coming out of it with more power than the other groups. And so that group that ended up having more power were the people who ended up writing the story. And why did they tell the story the way that they told it? It's to say, hey guys, here is the history. This is the story of every nation has a conquest story. So they told the story as a conquest story. And they said, there's a woman named Rahab who helped us as we're telling this legend, this mythical story. This woman named Rahab, as we were entering into the promised land, who helped us. She was on our side, and we didn't kill her or her descendants, because she was good to us. So the reason that they tell the story in this mythical, legendary way is to tell the people who were in the land, who didn't have the power, you're part of Rahab's lineage. You're safe with us. We're not out to get you. Yeah, you may be a foreigner, but our scriptures tell us to love the foreigner in our midst. When I first heard this idea, I was like, whoa, that reframes everything. Everything about this conquest narrative. And again, you can, James Allison has this, that tells about it in his books, Jesus, the Forgiving Victim. Other scholars are like looking and saying, oh, wow, there's no archaeological evidence for this. Why would they tell the story the way that they did? Oh, it's because to say the people who are in the land who aren't us are supposed to be here because they're part of who Rahab is. So that's a shift in the thinking too. And Amber, I'm going to get to this too. Christian Zionists completely disregard that there are Christian Palestinians. Well, yeah, Christian Zionism is another issue that I wanted to get at, because Christian evangelicalism, Zionism, is a huge problem in this, as Amber well knows. And this goes back generations as well. I mean, you probably have seen some like apocalyptic preachers with their signs that say, that are about the end times. And the end times are supposed to happen in Jerusalem with this, like, with this war. And so whenever there are conflicts in Israel and Palestine, Christians are like, oh, are we at the end time? Is Jesus finally going to come? And they get all giddy. And that's awful. I don't have a word for it. It is the worst interpretation of Christianity. That there are really bad interpretations of Christianity. That's one of the worst. To try to inspire more conflict in this area in hopes that Jesus is going to descend from the clouds and rapture up into heaven the elect is the biggest garbage theology that is. There's a lot of garbage theology. That might not be the biggest. I'm just feeling emotional about it right now, because this is part of, like, as Amber is pointing out, the Christian sin that's involved in a lot of this is to not try to de-escalate the conflict, but try to escalate it so that Jesus will come back and save the elect. It's anyway, sorry. I'm not sorry. Sorry, not sorry. So Amber says it doesn't matter, but they're going to back Judaism because of the faith, of faith. They cannot ignore that all of Palestinians aren't Muslims. They also cannot portray themselves as pro-life if they are okay with genocide of an entire nation. Yeah, the whole pro-life thing is, another, yeah, that's they. It's part of the hypocrisy of it all. Pro-life, except for Palestinian life, is a lot of it, except for Muslim life. Yeah, it's. Hi, Melanie. Good afternoon. Amber says, I was just thinking that the secular Israeli powers sound very much like our own problem with Christian nationalism. Yeah, it's all tied together, and maybe it's right wing, far right wing mindset. I don't want to scapegoat it, but that might be part of the issue, is this just constant need to find the enemy within in order to unite against them. And that's how we keep our power, is to constantly be afraid of the Muslims within, or the Jews within. It doesn't really matter, as long as it's somebody who isn't us. And we're seeing that play out throughout human history, throughout what's happening in the nation of Israel. And we see it in the United States as well. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts on this massive conflict and what can we do to solve it? On an individual level, don't get caught up in the us against them mentality. Even the right wingers, name the garbage Annas, point about the garbage bag. So good. That's sticking with me. Name the garbage with it's within me, so I can take the garbage out in the garbage bag that's within me, that's within my nation, and that's within the world. You know, Jesus has us start off by taking the log out of our own eye, so we can take the splinter out of someone else's eye. And there are some pretty big logs in my eye, and some pretty big splinters in my nation and in other nations. You know, one of the things about the prophets is that they give this warning. And somebody on TikTok asked if I knew that Israel was a secular state, and what does that have to do with how I'm interpreting this? Yeah, you know what? I think that God, as a pastor, I think that God calls all states, all governments, and I get this from the Hebrew scriptures, from what we call the Old Testament, the prophets. God calls nations to care for the poor, the weak, the marginalized, in biblical language, the widows and the orphans within your midst. When you stop doing that, when a nation stops caring for the vulnerable and starts treating them as enemies, you've gone off the rails. You have missed the plot. And the prophets warn that any nation that does that, and this I need to say about my nation, the United States, as much as any other, any nation that does that is not going to stand. That's the prophetic warning, because you're not living into God's desire for what politics should be about. And politics is just how we live our lives with one another. Here in the United States, when we have so many people who are homeless, and yet we're the richest country in the world, kids homeless, doesn't matter how old you are, but that we have kids homeless, kids starving, and people are just like, get a job. Well, we've got jobs and they're not paying enough. Many folks are working multiple jobs and still barely getting by. And so we end up blaming those who are already vulnerable, because the system is set up in a way that doesn't help those who are vulnerable. The prophets say that if you are in a governmental system like that, if that's how your politics works, that's not what God wants, and your nation may fall. So those are like the consequences that the prophets warn us about. And that's the prophetic warning for every nation, the United States, Israel, Saudi Arabia, all of them. You cannot stand. You cannot survive if you're going to continue oppressing people. So don't oppress people. That's the message of the prophets. So the good news, hopefully the good news, is that we can change. We can change here in the United States. Hopefully Israel can change. You know, we had a system where we can vote out people who we don't like, and hopefully that works out for the better. And hopefully political powers that be in all nations, including Israel, that feel the need to create an enemy, hopefully they won't be in power very much longer. That might be naive of me, but we'll see. Anyway, the good news is when your eyes start to be opened up to the ways that political powers work, and the Hebrew scriptures are trying to warn us about this. The New Testament often tries to warn us about this, and the Quran warns us about this. The Quran is all about, over and over again, it says the same basic prophetic message, which is care for the vulnerable in your midst. The first words of each chapter of the Quran, the first words of the Quran itself, are "In the name of God, the most merciful, the most compassionate." that's the lens through which the Quran gives us in order to read this holy book. Mercy and compassion is right there at the beginning and runs throughout. So we all have to deal with the violence in our own text. I've shown you a little bit about how scholars have helped me deal with the violence within the Bible. I hope that made sense to you. It's a little complicated, but it's all about reading through the lens of compassion and mercy, who is the God, the only God worth believing in my opinion. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts on this complicated topic. Thank you for being here. You can keep up with all of One Question with Pastor Adam on the Raven Foundation page and on ravenfoundation.org under Pastor Adam. You can also check out the podcasts wherever you listen to your podcasts. Amber says this: we always live into hope. The kingdom of heaven brought closer to earth as we choose love in our daily acts, whether large or small. We need more of that. Amber, thank you for taking us home. That was a nice home run right there, Amber. Thank you. So friends, we will do it all again next week on Thursday at 3 o'clock Central, 1 o'clock Pacific, here on the Raven Foundation Facebook page and the Clackamas United Church of Christ Facebook page. Until then, God be with you, friends.